I would say that anyone who listens to the show or anyone who reads books or thinks about this stuff, like, you know, there's something inside them which is saying, like, there's more. There's more. I want to know more. You need to know more, whatever that would be.
For some odd reason, I had to have more. You know, it was like a hook. It got me, and I knew that I had to continue looking. You know, whether it was in those woods or other places, I knew I had to branch out and do this more often.
Many things we could talk about that experience, but one of them, I just realized there's people who just cannot deal with the idea that something in our experience is outside of the material or the explainable. And
you're okay with me being involved in the occult, but I'm a weirdo because I saw UFO. All right. That makes a whole lot of sense.
He is a reptilian hybrid. So he looks normal, but he actually is a reptilian.
He never believed me. All these things were happening, he never believed me. He goes, oh, yeah, right, sure. I see images walking down the hall at night, big black images, and like almost like the thing on Harry Potter. It was just bizarre.
Spiritual, they do, you know, they let out good spiritual energy. So that's what a lot of witchcraft is, she explained to me. But she said, that's not what our coven believes. We're the other kind of witch. So we're all getting kind of terrified at this point.
He said, you were disrespectful of their burial ground. You, as a Native American, should know better than to build there. And the spirits are angry with you for doing that.
Parents, listen to your children. Do not rule the paranormal out. That is so important. Please believe them. Help them.
I looked up, and this upright, walking, hairy creature was walking into the tree line about my 3 o'clock position, and it had the deer over its shoulder. It grabbed its head, took it, and just smashed it up against a tree.
You do have a special Valentine's Day tour coming up because, well, I think I just saw an orb fly by you, by the way.
Did you? Fantastic.
Pretty sure that's
I'm not
what it
surprised.
Was. I'm going to go look at it after, but
yeah. A lot of energy around me.
Yeah, just like quickly across your right side there.
Oh, wow. I didn't even feel
it. We'll have to look at that after.
There's happy energy in here. I feel it's happy, which is good.
Oh, yes, it's that time again. Time for your Friday Night Fright. This is Unexplained Incorporated, and we are open for business and ready to believe you. I'm your host, Phantom Phil. Welcome once again to episode number 60. This time, I welcome on fellow podcasters from the Hush Hush Conspiracy Hour. We're going to talk some Hollow Moon and Hollow Earth. And we're going to get to know the guys a little bit. They got a cool story and a cool show. So we're going to get right to it. Of course, that would not be complete without an intro from Angel Card Amy. Here we go.
Tonight on Unexplained Inc., Mystery Mike, Declassified Dave, and Slick Frank Sanders come by to educate the true believers on the show Hush Hush Society Conspiracy Hour. They will explain how they work as a three-piece unit and discuss theories of Hollow Earth and Hollow Moon with Phantom Phil. This episode is loaded with valued information and begins right now.
All right. I've had many podcasters on this show before, but this is the first time where I've had three from one show at the same time. I've had two at the same time, but this is the first time three hosts are joining me from the Hush Hush Society Conspiracy Hour. What I'm going to do, guys, is I'm going to introduce yourselves individually, and then I want you to tell me the origins of your nickname and kind of how you came together with this whole thing or what your contribution is to your show. So first off, Mystery Mike, you're up.
what's the story behind your host name, and what's your overall contribution to Hush Hush?
You know, you can't take each of our names separately, honestly. The show, when we before we even set up a show, we had the idea of just this random podcast that may or may not have ever come to light, and it was called Declassified Dave and Mystery Mike's Hush Hush Society Conspiracy Hour featuring Slick Frog Sanders
and the Mollywop Band.
Right.
And the Mollywop Band. Yeah, originally there was supposed to be some sort of backing band to this, but that's kind of how it went. It was you get the alliteration of the Mystery Mike and Declassified Dave, and Slick Frog Sanders actually wasn't even a member at the time when Dave and I first started talking about it. And then we said, hey, you know, we're going to need this third person. If we're going to stick with this name, then we have to have a Frog Sanders. And so it came to be.
Very good. So you guys are just one unit together. Tell me, now I'm curious, what was this backup band going to contribute to your show, and why did they back out or not work out? I'm really, really curious about this one now.
As you can tell, it was originally just kind of a joke. Like I said, you know, the show, we didn't really know if it was going to be a real thing or not. But the way that we saw it before its inception was kind of like a late night TV show, you know, like a late show or something like that, where we would have this featured band, and we'd be talked in, and there would be music, you know, leading us in, and we'd have a monologue, and, you know, I don't know, for some odd reason, it's what we imagined in our head, that we would be some sort of late show personalities.
We imagined it with Muppets too, like Muppet style puppets. So I think that was the harder part, I think, was being like, man, how do we pull that off? Muppets. And yeah, and it fell off pretty quickly.
Yeah. I mean, that sounds like a great style in theory, but I'm sure in execution, especially if you know you're mostly doing audio only, it brings apart its own set of challenges and setbacks. But still, who knows, maybe someone else will come out there with the whole late night talk show idea for this type of material. It's very, very interesting. My next question for you guys is, I do this podcast solo, but I have guest hosts and monthly contributors. Do you ever find that three's a crowd and maybe a little too much in terms of content delivery and butting heads, or has it been a well-oiled machine for you guys since you first started this?
I want to say it's been a well-oiled machine. Very well-oiled.
Getting used to, like, but once we figured out each other's, like, talking patterns and, you know, just kind of how to work around each other, it all came together pretty cohesively.
I've also known Mike for, 15 plus years? So we've been around each other quite some time, and Frank is Mike's brother, so they kind of know each other too. So
we know each other a little bit.
Yeah, so we're very.
Yeah, that's a little known secret. Don't tell anybody.
Yeah, don't tell anybody that we all know each other for a very long time. We weren't recruited.
Okay.
I think in terms of material and research and stuff of that sort, we've all kind of, as Frank said, along with knowing each other's speaking patterns, but we also have kind of taken on our own duties and know what we're supposed to do, as far as who's editing, who's researching, who's saying what, who's doing what, and, you know, manning the social medias and whatever else. So we kind of got that out of the way and kind of figured that out very early with the inception of the show. And so far, it's been pretty good. So it's worked out well for us. And if we see a subject that we have in our roster coming up, and we say, hey, you know, this might not work, or this is something that maybe we should hold off on, then we switch it up, and we all agree and we work through it. So it's more, we're a very cohesive unit, I would say.
No, I'm glad to hear that, because that is an ultimate recipe for success in podcasting. When I first started the show back in 2020, I was planning for it back as late as 2019, and I got connected with a well-known podcaster in my area here in Canada who hosts several shows and was very good, a bit of a sage for me to go to for advice. And when I first started, I really, really wanted a co-host because I didn't have the confidence quite to do everything on my own. And he says, whatever you do, do not force yourself into getting a co-host that isn't compatible with you. Otherwise, your show is going to tank. And I've stuck by that advice to this day. And here we are, well over a year later, and I'd say it's worked out for me. So, I mean, I'm so happy to see that chemistry is everything for you guys. And since, you know, you are close knit, even though we'll do our best to keep it a secret here, like you said, I want to hear, how did you guys get into, either collectively or individually, the world, the polarizing world of conspiracy? Because I think with me and my other friends in this, we've all had kind of our black pill, red pill moments that made us switch and wake up. And I know it's a bit of a loaded question, but I would love to hear the story of what made you discover this information and the secrets of the world in our universe and made you want to start a show on it, like the purpose and the why.
That's a good one. Dave, you want to take that?
For me personally, I mean, I've been talking about a lot of this stuff since I was a teenager. I was kind of a wacky little kid, so I would always talk about the weird stuff, and I guess having kind of my own weird paranormal things happening in my life too, that kind of sparked it. And then my dad wasn't shoved that stuff down my throat, you know, being 5 years old and terrified of the X-Files, and he's like, you're watching the show, you know. So I think for me personally, it's been in my life pretty much my whole life. But when it comes to us starting the show, Mike previously had a podcast called Quiet on the Set where they did movie reviews, and it was an awesome show. So I already knew that when we were talking about doing this, that, you know, I knew Mike knew a little bit of what he was doing with it, and he's also very good behind a microphone. So we always talked about this stuff. You know, if Frankie or Mike are doing something, they're talking about stuff all the time, and this is well before and we even started this show. So when the pandemic hit, we decided that we were gonna make a show about conspiracy theories. But it was a very difficult process to think of how to execute it, because there are so many conspiracy theory shows. And for me personally, it sounds kind of cliche, but 10, 11 years ago, the conspiracy podcast for me was honestly Joe Rogan Experience on his first couple episodes. So that really kind of been like, oh wow, there is a way to do this. But I wasn't even interested in doing it at the time myself. I was in music and doing a whole different type of thing. But I think for us, it's just something we're very interested in, and we know we can jabber on about. And then when it comes to the show, I think putting it all together, we all want everything to be really clean and pretty and a good product, so other people can enjoy our passion in the way that we, I think, enjoy some of these topics, or not enjoy some of the topics we talk about, but they need to be talked about.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I think for me, kind of along the same lines of Dave, I've always been very interested in it. UFOs, ghost, paranormal type stuff. Also had many different paranormal types of experiences. And when you step back and you really look at the world, even at a young age, and I think to segue a little bit, I think being kind of an outcast in high school and middle school kind of puts you in this seat where you are allowed to take a step back and look at the world and say, wow, there's some really ugly people in it, and there's really all these different things going on. And you look at the news and you realize that we're minuscule. We are very, we're essentially nothing. And I hate to say that, but in the grand scheme of a timeline of the universe and in the grand scheme of everything that exists and everything that is encompassed within the entire creation, we're nothing. We're a blip. And if that doesn't make you take pause and realize that there is more to this, there is more that you don't understand, there is more that you don't see, there is a vast amount of information that you will never, ever, ever get to take in or hear or realize, it definitely makes you start to look at the things that are unexplainable. things that are mysteries, things that are just way beyond anything of what you are. And that in itself is, I think, is kind of the red pill that everybody needs to take. I don't know if there's ever going, if there's, you know, a lot of people have had aha moments. And I don't think that everybody maybe should have an aha moment. I think everybody should have a collective moment where they look at each other and say, it can't only be us, and it can't only be this, and it can't only be what we see. So that's my take on it.
No, that's tremendous. And here on Unexplained Incorporated, I haven't had a lot of those personal paranormal experiences growing up like you guys have, but I'm really curious, and I just have this constant inner knowing that there's more out there than what we see and what we're being told. And I delve into paranormal, aliens, cryptid, conspiracy, and spirituality, because I believe all those subjects, eventually, the deeper you look into them, they are all interconnected with one another. So, yeah, I agree that it's more about a collective aha than an individual one, but sometimes the individual leads to the collective, and we just have to go from there. And you guys are proving to me right now that you've started and are continuing this show for all the right reasons. You've been doing it for a fairly short period of time, but you have experienced tremendous growth, to my understanding, which is great. What makes Hush Hush different, or what makes it stand out in a podcasting genre that I feel, even though there's a lot of quality content out there, it is also on the verge of being oversaturated, because conspiracy topics, especially during the pandemic, are more provocative and more popular than ever before. So I can imagine some of the hurdles you guys have had starting this show. What do you feel makes your show stand out from the other conspiracy pods out there?
So I think there's two major things that make us stand out from other conspiracy podcasts. One major one is that we are super informative when it comes to the background, the history of these conspiracies. We don't just come out and say, this is the conspiracy, this is what we believe, this is what we get into. Who started it? Where did it come from? The history of that conspiracy, the thought process behind that conspiracy, the belief system behind that. And I think that in itself is something that's different from a lot of conspiracy podcasts that we've come across. And that was one thing that we kind of hyper-focused on when we got into the show, is that we wanted to have that information, because realistically, there are people out there, there's millions of people out there, that they look at a conspiracy theory and they go, eh, whatever, that's not real. That's just some crackpot making it up. But what they fail to realize is that there is a history behind these. There's reasons why people believe these conspiracies. It's not just somebody woke up one day and said, I don't believe that we went to the moon. It's not, you know, it's not one of those moments where somebody lost their mind and they just go on believing these crazy things. A popular thing is that conspiracy theorists are crazy, but they're not. They're just super well-informed. They are researchers to the core, and that's really what it boils down to. Are there crazy people out there? Absolutely. There, you know, there's conspiracy theorists out there that I would file under crazy, but but mostly it comes down to research, and it comes down to just being informed and seeing the dots be connected. And it's kind of when it comes to like governmental things and cover-ups and stuff like that, it's like smoking out a liar. You know, the government will cover things up, not tell you things, but realistically, if you can find the smallest piece of evidence and find the smallest piece over here and over there and over there, and you connect those dots, then you have something that is viable. You have something that is real and tangible. So that's one thing that I think sets us apart. Another major thing that sets us apart from other shows is that we don't believe in every conspiracy theory that we cover. Uh-huh. We tell you uh-huh. whether or not we believe it or not. We will say, hey, even most recently, we did an episode on Flat Earth. We all wholeheartedly do not believe in Flat Earth. There's mm-hmm. zero thought, you know, zero research that is done by Flat Earthers, and they'll spout the same things over and over and over again without paying attention to science, realistically. But that's just an example. You know, there's so many different things we have covered that either we don't believe in, we do believe in, we'll call bullshit, or, you know, we'll say it's a possibility. And I think that is one thing that a lot of conspiracy podcasts kind of do, is they get into a subject and they push themselves into it and they go, well, I believe it could be real, whether they believe it or not. Is a whole nother story, but for us, we will always tell whether or not we believe in something.
Dave and Frank, would you like to add to that?
Yeah, I'd like to add my two cents into that. That's exactly what I was going to say, Mike. If that wasn't your second point, the fact that we bring to the table whether we subscribe to that theory or not, and why do we or why do we not? Because I feel like that brings a different level of quality to the show. Not only right at the end when we're like, okay, guys, what do we think about this? But more so throughout the entire episode. Depending on your take on it, as long as you're being honest with yourself throughout the production of the show, that episode in particular, and you're holding the stance on your belief, despite what it is, if you're holding that stance, it might come out differently as opposed to if you were just like, well, I'm just going to pretend to believe this for the sake of the show. It just brings a different level, because the banter is going to be different. Your tone of voice is going to be different. It's going to bring an entirely different quality to that episode when you have this divide in belief for the subject. I think that's really great. And of course, the chemistry between the three of us, I think that brings another level of quality to the show, because we've all known each other for so long.
Yeah, like I said earlier, the chemistry always helps. And if there's one knock just from me on conspiracy and alternative media, is that there may be too many people pulling in the same direction and screaming and shouting about the same narrative. So I really appreciate the fact that you guys are out there reaching people with different perspectives on the narrative. Now, when you talk Flat Earth, I assume you had David Weiss on the show, because he's been on this program as well.
We actually just interviewed our first real, I mean, we've had other podcasters on our show to do cryptid chronicles and stuff like that. But we've just interviewed our first non-podcaster. So as far as that goes, we're just kind of dipping our toes into interviews and whatnot. But there are definitely some people that I would love to have on the show. I would love to have debates with, or, you know, I even said in that Flat Earth episode, I think we all kind of agreed, is that if we had a person that could come on and talk about Flat Earth or talk about any other subject that we don't believe in and have real evidence, real science behind it, not just, well, it is this way because it is this way. Then it may be a moment where we are swayed into believing into something that we didn't believe in before. You know, it all boils down to information. But, you know, I've looked at Mark Sargent. You know, he's a big proponent of Flat Earth. I would say he's like the number one name in Flat Earth. So, you know, I've reached out to people. But yeah, we are just now getting into having those types of guests on.
Yeah, because the reason I bring up Weiss is that you three have all said your piece and your stance on Flat Earth, and he is on a relentless mission to go on as many different forums and podcasts as possible to try and convert people. And I'll say this, I'm not a true believer myself, but he is a very fascinating guy to listen to. And the fact that you guys are polar opposites on the issue, I think would make a tremendous show. So, I mean, just keep that in mind when you're more in tuned with having non-podcasting guests on as well. But one of the reasons I have you guys on right now is I want to switch to another theory involving our world, and that is the Hollow Earth theory. And I'll say this from what I've researched so far, unlike Flat Earth, more and more prominent figures in the present and throughout history are embracing a Hollow Earth or Inner Earth theory. It is becoming quite a bit more susceptible or accepted, I should say, within the mainstream science community. And this is one of the most, dare I say, fascinating conspiracy topics for myself. And you guys have done a very detailed and excellent episode on it. I don't want to regurgitate that information verbatim. But what I want to do right now, and after this, we're going to get into the Hollow Moon as well, because I think it's a nice tie-in, is I want to bring up just some points I've come across in my own research, and then you guys can jump in and add whatever and whenever you want. Does that sound a good way to guide this along?
Yeah, for sure.
All right. So I think my own perception growing up of the fact there might be an inner earth or a hollow earth came from countless references I saw in games, TV, and media to the famous sci-fi author Jules Verne and his very famous Journey to the Center of the Earth, which was written in the 1800s and has been immortalized, like I said, through all of our pop culture and entertainment. And you also have to give mention to The Lost World by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. And both books, the theme that ties them together is that they are deep expeditions that lead us into finding out that another type of being or prehistoric animals like dinosaurs are still among us living within the Earth. And the difference between the two stories is Jules Verne's story takes place on a journey into an Icelandic volcano, where Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's takes us to an entrance deep in the depths of the Amazon. Do you guys think those two stories are major fuel in terms of the Hollow Earth theory and where it came from? I know some stuff came before, but what did those two books have in terms of impact into how we perceive this theory?
Well, I'd say those are massive influences in the thought process, absolutely. Because at the time, I can't quote verbatim what the years were on those novels, but that was huge media influence. And you know, you're pretty much telling these people, even though they might have just been stories at the time, it wasn't fact as much as it was fiction, but it might have opened some people's minds up to the possibility.
You're always kind of, you always kind of look at things as people who put out these pieces of information are trying to tell you something, and it happens with television and movies nowadays is, you know, the famous line is like Hollywood is putting it in your face. They're telling you these things. Even as recently as like the Kong versus Godzilla movie, where it is strictly you're going to jump into that.
Yeah, I'm going to talk about that a little bit later, but I'm glad you brought it up.
Okay. Yeah. I think it goes back to, you know, books and writings. It's the same thing. They're trying to tell you something. Yeah, they're trying to tell a story, but they're also trying to tell a sliver of truth. And with those stories and how they were immortalized and go into movies and TV, and they kind of perpetuated the conversation further. I believe that they had a big impact on the way that we look at Hollow Earth and the way that we maybe take it as a piece of evidence of it existing. So, yeah, I think they play a major role, especially throughout the early, you know, throughout the 1800s, early 1900s. I think those pieces of information, they carry with people.
Can you imagine reading that book in 1864? Like, you know, can you imagine, whoa, like you would hop on a boat and go to the Amazon and wherever you need to go to get into a cave to find the center. Cause that sounds wild.
Mm. Well, yeah. there were so many publications and so many expeditions around that time, of the late 1800s, early 1900s, revolving around the Amazon. It was such a mysterious place and people were so interested in what could possibly be there. Lost cities, Mayan gold, just all these different things that the different possibilities of what could be in the Amazon. So if you have this book that is written and saying, hey, this is one of those places where you could access the inner earth or the hollow earth, you know, it just like every other story or folk tale that comes from that area, your mind goes wild and you say, oh, well, it's a possibility. We don't know what could be down there, but that's, you know, the more grand the story, the more your imagination runs wild. And maybe that spurs more stories and more expeditions. Maybe that's really what pushed a lot of people to go down there.
Yeah, and to back up what Dave said, yeah, reading it in the 1800s must have been mind-blowing. But also, think about as far ahead as, say, like the 1940s and 50s. Air travel is still sparse, and it's way before the technology boom, which can let you explore a lot of the world from your own home. So I think even almost a century after those books came out, that curiosity is still there and probably amplified with the oncoming push of technology. So there's a very, very good point brought up there. Now, I don't want to get too sciencey on here, because when people talk about theories of space and the earth and what it actually is, I will put up my hand and I'm a complete ignoramus with science and aerodynamics in this regard. So someone could regurgitate a bunch of facts and stats to me and I won't know the difference if they're true or not. But here is one thing, scientifically speaking, I want your feedback on, is that we all, like, science has all their theories of what the earth's core actually is and how far it goes. But no one has actually been able to see it. We have only been able to drill so far, and all research on the inner crust and inner core of the Earth is all based on theories, okay, that we've all been told and sold our entire lives. Generally speaking, what are your thoughts on this? Because if we've never been given visual evidence of what is actually inside the Earth, like, I think this is what fuels the fire of curiosity within people. Like, why should we take this at everybody's word then? Like, so what has the science been getting right and getting wrong about all this?
That's an interesting question, because so it's said that the Earth from crust to the core is somewhere in between 1,000 and 2,000 miles, I believe. And we haven't bored very deep at all. I want to say the deepest that it's been bored was like just over 5 miles deep. And with that information, even if it's false, even if it's a fallacy, even if it's based off of theories as to how far the crust is to the core, that leaves a lot of undiscovered and lack of research left within us and the said core. And to turn your head the other way and say, oh, well, no way the Earth isn't hollow, no way there's nothing more to this, would be ignorant, in my opinion. And then you've got the complete lack of research in our own oceans, which those go down to the same place. Those lead underground. So, I mean, I think it's ignorant to say that there's not more to it, or there's not the possibility to there being more to it.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah.
The problem with the whole the theory, the scientific theory of our core and how the different layers of the Earth go, is that we really don't know. Like you said, it's a best guess. It's a theory. It's a model that they put up, and you know, you could do the infrared thing and see, oh, well, it's this far into the Earth, and you can kind of do your best guess. But realistically, the way I look at it is, when a planet forms, is it forming so compact around that core that there aren't voids within? Are there areas within the layers that can't host, you know, entire spaces? Is it so compact that maybe there isn't some sort of atmosphere? Maybe not as we know it, but is there, you know, there's just too many possibilities, especially when you look at the formation of a planet. I don't believe that any planet really forms as such a solid mass that there wouldn't be some sort of vacancy somewhere. So whether it's this vast cavern system, which we all know exists even under the United States, there's a massive cavern system and throughout the world. That in itself, if you just look at the cavern systems, you know that a planet is not that compact and not that built that way, in which there would be no void and there would be no absence. So, it's a tricky thing, because you wanna believe in the science, but at the same time, there's also, you know, the science is telling you that it's not exact.
Yeah. Nothing is exact about this. And once again, like I said, that's why it fuels our curiosity. And I have one more question based on this. And I'm really not trying to be facetious here, but I've always wondered, say I go out into the country and my nearest neighbor is like 5 to 10 miles away from me, and I have a big plot of land. What if I had the industrial equipment to do so, and maybe even a small crew, and I just started digging and digging and digging? Would I reach a certain point where, you know, men in dark suits would show up and force me to shut it down, or helicopters would be flying over? Like, I've always wondered what would happen if someone had the means and the space just to do their own dig without any regulations or government bodies present. Like, what do you guys think would happen there? Because I've always wondered.
As long as you got the permits. No, I'm kidding.
that raises an interesting point here, for sure.
Yeah,
Sorry, say that again.
I don't know. I mean, what's the farthest depth? What is it? It's in Russia, right? Where they drilled the farthest or something like that.
Russia or Germany or something.
Yeah. I mean, you got to get to a certain point when the geology changes in theory, right? So are you just going to, mm-hmm. be digging and digging and digging, and all of a sudden it's just like, wow, it's really hot. And then like, just lava comes straight through the dirt. I mean, there's got to be a diminishing point. So I guess if whatever the layers of how the supposed geology is of our planet, I mean, we've only gone fractions of it. So yeah, if the Earth, I mean, if you take the Earth as a whole, around 8,000 miles wide, and if the proposed theory of hollow Earth in some of these is that the Earth's crust is 500 miles thick and there's a whole nother atmosphere under there, we haven't even gone that near that. So it's, I think it's entirely plausible. It's like you're drilling a hole in like a pressurized thing, and all of a sudden you just start seeing air come through it. That's what happens when you hit the bottom, the other atmosphere. You're like, oh no, I popped it.
I popped the bubble. I think somebody might show up if you started digging.
Yeah, that deep.
Oh, I think it more so depends on where you were. So if you were over a proposed hollow Earth spot, then yeah, the government would come knocking at your door and go, "Hey, what are you doing?" But if you were in one of those spots and you know, you had one of those satellites go overhead and they'd go, "Oh, well, there's nothing underneath them. Let them keep going." The government is all about letting you waste your time. So, if you were over an interesting spot, yeah, I'd say they'd stop by and wonder what you were doing. And all permits aside, you know, like Dave had said, you know, you're going to hit certain areas of layers that are almost impossible to drill through. Then it becomes kind of a financial thing. You know, if you had all the money in the world, are you going to start, you know, breaking out diamond bits and drilling through things that you don't normally drill through? And but yeah, to answer the question, I would say that the government would show up at some point.
And I wouldn't say because they're watching you with satellites. I would say more so if some company that produces these massive boring machines, if they had some random civilian walk into one of their facilities and say, "Hey, I need one of these for my own personal scientific research." They would. Feel like they would be required to report that to somebody. Like, "Hey, this isn't a scientific research community. This isn't a scientist. This is just some guy looking to drill in his backyard." I feel like they would have to tell somebody, and eventually somebody would show up and check on what you were doing.
Yeah, I need a 500-mile drill bit.
Yeah, either way, it's a social experiment I don't think I want to be a part of. And for the true believers listening, I will not either promote or talk you out of doing this. This is all up to your choice, and none of us are responsible. So you've been warned.
I have a challenge.
Yeah, take no responsibility, but please do it.
Yeah, please do it. But you have to do it.
TikTok challenge, people. So
yeah, but you have to do it with just like a regular garden shovel. You can't do it with anything. A pickaxe and a garden shovel. That's all you got.
Yeah, that could be a one-way ticket to arthritis. But whatever you do, this is your own personal responsibility. So we'll just wash our hands of that right there. So I talked about the books in the past, like Doyle and Verne. Another thing that has stoked our curiosity on this is ancient spiritual, religious, and even old cultural society beliefs. I'm going to name just a couple for you guys right now, and then I want your thoughts and opinions. In ancient Tibetan and Hindu traditions, they constantly talk about a place called Shambhala. I hope I'm pronouncing that right, but it's a mystical place that is supposedly near Inner Asia and also may have its own secret entrance into the earth. Also, Buddhists have been known to believe a race of supermen and women live in the earth and occasionally come to the surface to oversee humanity, and the entrances are guarded by llamas. Now, I have no idea if this is present day or if it was hundreds of thousands of years ago, but apparently Buddhism embraces this as well. And various indigenous elders have talked about star people who live inside the earth. And I just want to give a quick shout out the excellent alt media website Collective Evolution, which is also in my home province. They have written many articles about this, and that's where I cited some of that information from. So what are your guys's, what kind of things have you guys come across in terms of ancient societies or spiritualists or religions believing in beings coming from the Hollow Earth? Is there any more you could add other than what I just said, or thoughts on the ones that I did?
Well, yeah, you see this stuff all over the world throughout ancient history. Just to list a few other cultures that shared in these belief systems that there's more under the earth. You've got Celtic mythology, Hindu mythology, in Russian and Chinese folklore, they mention hollow caverns within the earth. In Mexican folklore and ancient Germanic belief systems, so you've got this stuff spread throughout every single continent, realistically. And for those belief systems to travel from continent to continent might seem a little bit unrealistic. I don't think that if these people were to travel from continent to continent that they'd be spreading the word of the Hollow Earth. I feel like they came to these conclusions on their own. And for these ancient cultures to come to these conclusions on their own and have it be so widespread throughout the planet, there has to be some sort of sliver of truth to it. Especially just because you see it everywhere.
Yeah, one thing that we stress in our show, and we've mentioned it a ton of times if you've ever listened to our show, is correlation. So if you're looking at these belief systems as they go across the world, why does everybody believe the same thing? Of course, there's different variations to it and different variations to the story, but the main part of their tale is the fact that there is something inside the earth. As Frank mentioned, there's so many different mythologies. Most of it has to do with the underworld and maybe hell. Hindu has like Patala, which is the underworld for the Hindu religion. And as he said, the Celtic mythology, which has Cruachan, and that's Ireland's gate to hell. So there's a lot that has to do with hell, and I don't know if it's maybe, based on elders seeing these things, or ancient stories of these things happening, and somebody seeing these creatures come up from a fiery place. We don't know what those environments look like if there is a hollow earth. We imagine them to be much like our earth. There's trees and there's grass and but who knows, maybe it could be a completely different environment, sulfuric maybe, a lot of lava, fire, dark heat, it's a different makeup, obviously. Maybe that's where a lot of these stories come from, is seeing these creatures or seeing these different environments of just kind of hell, really.
If you go off of geology, hell makes sense, fire, mm-hmm. and lava and whatever. But a lot of these ancient cultures that we had researched, it wasn't a negative place. It was like places of peace, and a lot of the, mm-hmm. especially in the Native American cultures, it was where their ancestors came from. It was either the stars, mm-hmm. or below. So, and every
Sometimes
almost,
both.
Yeah, almost, in almost every culture we found, there was a known place where you can get to the underworld. And mm-hmm. some of them, like Mike said, like in Celtic mythology, I would say, the gate to hell. But in a lot of these other traditions and other places, it's where ancestors come from, or there are other tribes or other beings that are mentioned. I think the biggest one for me that was very interesting was the ones in North America, like the Hopi believe that there's an entrance in the Grand Canyon. So, and the Iroquois believe that their ancient ancestors emerged from the world inside the earth. So there's a lot of positivity and then a lot of like darkness, depending on where you are. And I guess that goes hand in hand with some of those cultures' ancient religious belief systems that are very much, I guess, very different. Even if you're very in close proximity, some of these cultures think very differently of what inside the earth might be. So I think the perception of hell is good, but the perception of clouds within a whole nother world in there that has people living in there is also plausible. It's really, really weird. I don't know.
it's all really weird. And a few weeks back, I had our mutual friend Jeremy from IRH on here, and we did a deep dive into reptilians and that whole conspiracy and theory. And we won't get into it right now because we don't have the time today. And I know you've talked about this on your show a little bit, but there's constant sightings from past and present of reptilians coming out of the ground and possibly even hiding in modern day gravel pits or have hidden entrances there. But like I said, that's a whole other discussion for another day. And I'm sure what you guys would add to it would be amazing. But there's just a couple of other things I want to bring up here. And then we're going to shift focus to the Hollow Moon in a few minutes. But I want to give a couple of examples of modern times science that have also stoked the curiosity of Hollow Earth. I came across a clip in season 10 of Ancient Aliens. Now, we all know about the memes, and we know this show has kind of become a parody of itself, but I still get the odd nuggets of information from the show, and I find it just entertaining at the end of the day. But in season 10 in 2014, they did their own thing on Hollow Earth, and I don't remember the organization and the scientists involved, but they drilled down. Now, this number is disputed. What I have in my notes is 400 miles inside the Earth, but I've also heard 500, 600, and even less. So we'll say it's a few hundred miles into the Earth in 2014. And scientists found a body of water three times the size of the Earth's oceans, which brings a whole new level to the theory about a sustainable society of beings or race of beings living within the Earth, which is really cool as well. Also, February of 2015, scientists are baffled by sudden holes that appear in the ground on oil fields in northern Siberia. And this also happens to be near a stretch of barren land known as the end of the world, which is no coincidence as well. And the final thing I want to bring up here is, have you guys seen, there was a video circulating a few years back, and I believe it was Russian scientists digging either in Antarctica or Siberia, I don't remember which, and they drill down, and the camera goes, they have a camera going down, and all of a sudden you hear these horrific screams, like it sounds like people suffering in torment.
Yeah.
To me, this very well could have looked like an elaborate hoax, and likely is, but I want to get your thoughts on that video and some of the other modern findings that I talked about.
Well, when I don't know what kind of audible anomalies happen when you have a mile that deep, but you've got a lot of factors that could contribute to an outcome that might sound like the sound that they recorded, whether it be vibrations in the ice caused by nearby water currents, or you could have wind coming from the surface and spiraling down that hole and making some sort of audible noise. And that, I'm not saying that they absolutely captured screams in that video, but there absolutely could have been some sort of noise that then could have been altered. I don't know. It's
like howling wind.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I'd say it's something more along the lines of that than a lot of people screaming, honestly.
Yeah, I honestly think that that one is might be a farce, you know, and then them trying to, say that they've drilled, that far. And I think I know the Ancient Alien episode you're talking about, too, because I kind of been binge watching this show since they put everything on Hulu. But
nice.
I'm gonna go with Frankie with this one. you know, I think it's entirely possible because they, I think I've seen a couple videos of them dropping like, you know, rocks or little pieces of ice down those boreholes and some of the noises that it makes as it's going down there.
Yeah.
It's pretty, pretty wild. I'd say there's one thing you didn't mention. It's not, I wouldn't say it's the most modern, but more modern. And we had talked about it on our show in length, I think in a couple episodes, but there was Admiral Byrd and his account of going into a hollow earth, I think is, it's one of the more wild ones, but it's one of the ones where there was a couple quotes that they had said, almost like the government knows about that there's an entire civilization going on under where we live right now. So that's an interesting, I think that was the most interesting thing for me about this, the whole research we did for Hollow Earth was the fact that you have military personnel that claim to have met other folks from underneath and that the government didn't seem too surprised when he said it.
Yeah, and that's something that you guys go deeper into on your podcast. So I'll have the true believers tune into your show. Just before we get into Hollow Moon, I want to have a brief discussion on the amazing revelations in the Godzilla versus Kong movie this year. But first, what can people hear on your Hollow Earth episode that we didn't touch on today?
Yeah, I mean, as I've said before with our show, we kind of dive into a lot of history. So a lot more about the ancient beliefs. You know, we touch on a lot of science. So like the Chihalian experiment that took place, vertical deflection, a lot of very heavy science talk. But we kind of work our way through it in a way that's manageable. We also, as you talked about with, you know, films and novels and whatnot, we go into the Shaver mystery, UFOs with the Hollow Earth, more about Admiral Byrd and his encounter with another, what he calls another, another group of people that he ran into. A whole civilization that he says was lost to the world that lives within. But yeah, there's a lot of stuff that we go into. It's a very, very deep dive. So if you're into the history and into the science of it and the whole background, make sure to look into it.
No pun intended.
And as we try to, we added a small segment of information to potentially disprove the theory, whether we believed it or not. We just brought that information to the table just to kind of get a full rounded perspective on the Hollow Earth theory.
Good, good. And that's what you got to do with this type of information. And I'm glad you're bringing that to the light. So Mike was talking earlier about predictive programming. And a light bulb just went off in my head earlier in the discussion. I'm going to get your thoughts on the stuff in Godzilla versus Kong. I have not seen the movie. Like, I am just generally behind the curve on major blockbuster films myself most of the time. But in research for this, I went on YouTube and I watched some of the direct clips involving this. And I was kind of blown away with what they did with it and what it's suggested. But I also remembered this old Simpsons clip. I don't remember what episode it was on where Homer like falls down a manhole and he's being repelled. And while he's falling down the manhole, he passes through all these subterranean sects of different species and creatures. And it's totally random and weird. And I was just like, I have to go back and watch that again because it was so pointless, but it was so like bizarre and out there too. So I just wanted to bring up that example, but the Godzilla versus Kong, this Hollow Earth theory phenomenon, whatever you want to call it, I don't think it's been exposed on a bigger platform than this one. And what they've done with it in the story to me is pretty crazy. So before we switch into Hollow Moon, what are your thoughts on this?
I absolutely love that you want to touch on this subject because I've been crazy about the King Kong movies ever since I was very young. And because of COVID, my girlfriend and I haven't been able to go to the movies in a while. So King Kong vs. Godzilla came out shortly after the theaters had reopened. So I was like, screw it, we're going. Let's go see this. And I wasn't aware of the Hollow Earth connection with the movie before I went to go see it. And we saw it, and I was like blown away. I was absolutely blown away. Yeah, we got out of the theater, and I instantly texted Mike and Dave, and I was like, guys, you have to see this. It's literally a Hollow Earth movie, and there's a connection with like a Hollow, not a Hollow Earth podcast, but a conspiracy podcast. So it just, it hit a lot of notes really well for me. Their take on Hollow Earth was actually extremely fascinating, and I've never seen it depicted in such a way that blew me away so well. Just the way that they traveled through like wormholes or black holes to get down there, and the gravity switches and the environments, and to see this beloved childhood fictional character that I've come to love so much, like running through Hollow Earth, it was really awesome for me.
I haven't seen the movie, but now I'm going to have to.
You have to, man.
Yeah.
Guys, I want to thank you so much for the time, because we're going to be wrapping up in a few minutes, and I know your schedules have been chaotic, and the fact the three of you came together and, you know, in different time zones, different countries, with myself in Canada, I'm really impressed we were able to pull all this off. So I want to touch very briefly, and then we're going to wrap up with a little bit more info about your podcast here. I feel we can't talk about Hollow Earth without mentioning a little bit about Hollow Moon Theory. Now, down the road with Unexplained Incorporated, I want to do a full episode on the moon and the moon landing and all the weirdness surrounding it. So we won't get super in depth here, but I just want to read you a couple of things and get your thoughts. So I first heard this theory from David Icke, and I'm a big fan of his work and a lot of what he says. And his entire video series on Hollow Moon, or Who Built the Moon, or The Moon Is Not What You Think It is really fascinating. And in one of his talks, he was inspired by a book called Who Built the Moon. I don't remember the authors. You'll have to Google or look it up. And he said after that, he got all sorts of information and connected all sorts of dots that made sense to this theory. And another mainstream scientist, Gordon MacDonald, who is from NASA, he publishes a paper stating that the moon is likely hollow. That is his thesis. And in November of 1969, which I'm sure by no coincidence is in the middle of all these Apollo missions, or just after, a meteor hits the moon, and apparently, according from scientists and NASA people, you know, take their words for whatever it's worth, the moon rang like a bell and had a reverberation that lasted for nearly 30 minutes, which further suggested that it might be hollow and that it's not a satellite at all. It's not a planetary satellite, and that it's a hollow structure that was built possibly by another species and strongly resembles the Death Star in Star Wars. And the last thing I want to add to this, is that Dr. Stephen Greer, who's very famous on the subject, he believes that the moon landing happened. He believes U.S. astronauts went to the moon, but the footage shot was fake. And there's an whole other rabbit hole that they found extraterrestrial crafts or beings on that mission. So if you guys are hearing this for the first time, this might make a great episode for your show in the future. And if not, what are your additional thoughts on the moon not being what you think it is?
Oh, that one's hard to wrap my head around. You know, Hollow Earth is hard to wrap my head around too. But like the moon being the Death Star, like a space station. I mean, who knows? It's entirely possible. I think the ringing of the bell is, I mean, only, you would think that NASA scientists would be able to come up with an explanation or a geologic explanation of why it did that. But if they are like, oh, well, the only way that can happen is if it's hollow, then it's kind of like, take it, like you said, take it for, you know, how you will with what NASA says and, you know, publishes. But we actually have a moon episode coming out shortly, so
nice,
we have lots to say about the moon.
Yeah, Hollow Moon is, that's an interesting one. It definitely is something that we'll have to look into. It's an interesting theory. It's like I previously said, how these things were formed, if they're that compact, if they're, you know, as far as it just being completely hollow, I don't know. And how thick is that crust, and how thick is the mantle and all that stuff. You know, there is, they say there's a core to it. So, but again, that's a scientific theory, much like the core and layers to our planet. So it's a very interesting theory for sure.
So Philip, let me get this right, because I'm unaware of the Hollow Moon theory. You pretty much hit the nail right on the head. I had not heard of this before. So once you started talking about it, I of course Googled it real quick. So what they're implying is that the moon is artificially created. It's some sort of space station or spaceship or research facility that is not natural to the cosmos whatsoever, right?
That's correct, yes.
Okay, so I wouldn't completely knock it, just because I have skepticism with most of the public knowledge of the moon. I don't completely necessarily I don't trust the moon landing footage or the information that's out there, nor any of the research that we have available to the public for looking into the moon. It's just a lot of it is really iffy and half-hearted, and so I won't completely discount it, but it's interesting. I think that's out there. It's definitely out there.
If it rang like a bell, it would not be cheese then.
Correct, no, right? It would not be cheese.
Yeah.
Don't count me in on that one, Dave. I'm so happy to hear you guys are coming out with an episode on that soon. And I was happy to bring it up. And just before we wrap, thank you so much again for the time. You guys have proven to me that your research and your approach to the show is, it's at a high level, and it's second to none. And I really appreciate that you explore both theories and will allow different perspectives to come in. So just before we wrap, where can everyone hear your show? And other than an episode on the moon, what else is coming up in the near future for Hush Hush?
Mike, you want to start that one?
Yeah, sure. You can find us literally everywhere. Anywhere that you can listen to podcasts, we are there. We have a YouTube channel. Also, we're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, the whole bit. We also have a website, hushhushsociety.com. You can go on there. We have our web store, all our episodes, everything. You can also get a hold of us on there if you want to tell us to check something out or tell us we did something wrong. We always enjoy that.
We have a few episodes that were actual listener episodes. So
yeah, we always take listener subjects. So I mean, if you hit us up with something and you want to hear it, most likely we will just dive right into it. We did that last season a couple times. We're doing it this season also. But coming up, what do we have? We have the moon landings are coming up.
Our next debriefing is going to be released on the 17th.
Yep. Yeah.
And it is going to be about HARP.
Ah, yes. Mm-hmm. Yep. HARP.
Moon landings is a little bit later, the end of the month, but little sneak peek.
Yeah. Later on, we will most likely get into, I think, Princess Diana. We're going to go into that a little bit. We were talking about doing something with D.B. Cooper. A little more mystery driven. We also have our cryptid chronicles episodes coming out where we're going to do the chupacabra. So as I said, we also have our guests that we're starting to get. So we're going to release our declassified discussions, which are, you know, little interviews with authors or people that are, you know, well known in their fields. We're still trying to gather guest lists. So if you are an expert in your field, please reach out to us.
Yeah, hit us up.
Great stuff, guys. Thank you so much. This was a very informative and entertaining discussion today, and I don't think we regurgitated a lot of the same information. It was a different take on things. So all the best, and we'll chat soon.
All right. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Once again, my special thanks to Mystery Mike, Declassified Dave, and Slick Frank Sanders for coming on to the show. That was a really good chat on Hollow Earth and Hollow Moon, but intentionally, we did not get all of it, so check out their episode on the Hollow Earth. It is very complete, and it is something you're definitely going to want to check out, as we're likely going to be collaborating with these guys in the future. More details on that when they are available. But before I leave you this fine, frightful Friday evening, let me correct myself on that one. I just got a couple of quick announcements for you. First of all, the June lineup is now available on all social media channels of Unexplained Incorporated. And if you haven't been following me on Instagram, what is wrong with you? What is going on? Phantom Phil Unexplained with underscores between all the words. I do Final Thoughts with Phantom Phil a couple of times a month on there, and that's where you get exclusive news breaking announcements, including the June lineup. That's where you heard it first. And also the major announcement that I will be doing guest blog posts on my spiritualshenanigans.blog, and I'm going to be doing it on the topic of shamanism, because as of the weekend of this posting, I officially begin my shamanic training, which is going to happen in steps. And all I can think of is Obi-Wan Kenobi's line to Luke Skywalker in the original OG Star Wars that says you're taking, how is it? Oh, now I can't remember it. I want to say the line and I can't remember it. It's, you've taken a major step into a larger world, or something along those lines. And yeah, my apologies for butchering that. My mind is failing me at the moment, but you get what I mean. And be sure to follow us on Twitter at PhantomPhil3 and Unexplained Incorporated on Facebook as well. And one other exclusive announcement from my last IGTV broadcast, and I got a video cameo from the man himself, Jeremy from the Infinite Rabbit Hole podcast. Coming up in sometime in June, I think, late May, early June, I'm going to be appearing on Infinite Rabbit Hole podcast again, and we're going to do a show. This is their third season, by the way, when it begins. We're going to be doing a third season, one of the first shows, if not the first of the third season, and we're going to be looking at The Simpsons and time travel, and how has Matt Groening and his writers been able to predict so many events that manifested into our realities on this animated series over the years. It's a good one. And just to elaborate, doing some prep for this, early prep, I came across the exact episode of The Simpsons referencing the Hollow Earth. It is, I'm just going to pull it up for you real quick. Yeah, Season 11, Episode 6 in 1999, Hello Gutter, Hello Fodder. This is where, and I mean, this is really like a dumb episode. It's probably one of my least favorites of back when I was still watching the show on a regular basis. Homer is very disenfranchised, and he goes up to
to a skyscraper that all of a sudden appears in Springfield, and he jumps off. He's trying to kill himself, but then he conveniently runs into Otto, the bus driver, on a bungee cord, no less, who's bungee jumping off the same skyscraper. And Homer decides he doesn't want to die, so he holds on to Otto, and they rappel down, and instead of hitting the pavement, there's an open manhole. They go down, and they go down to these subterranean races, the Orlocks, the Chuds, and then it ends with the Mole People, and Hans Moleman, for some reason, is running an earthquake machine. And if you want to know what type of predictive programming that is, you'll have to tune into Infinite Rabbit Hole and listen to what I have to say about that clip. But this was such a bizarre clip because it had nothing to the story and had nothing to do in, well, what I consider a throwaway episode anyway. But there it is. And yeah, it's very, very strange and oddly placed in terms of timing in that episode. And just to leave you with one more tease, there is another major source of predictive programming I found on The Simpsons that nobody on the internet seems to be talking about. I may have stumbled onto something big here. It's like another revelation in one of the unexplained case studies all over again. But my lips are sealed until I appear on the Infinite Rabbit Hole with Jeremy, and I think Jake might be back too, which will be another amazing plus. I'm hoping that's the case. Keep my fingers crossed. But we'll wait and see. In the meantime, you've listened to me for long enough, and I thank you so much for doing so. And you know the drill by now, true believers. Stay strong, stay healthy, and most importantly, stay curious. Especially if you really want to know what's inside of this earth, and grab your shovel and dig. I'm telling you, you never know what you're going to find. The doors of Unexplained Incorporated are now closed.